Welcome to the 2023 series of the Property Report podcast by Property Guru. For this special episode, we will be tackling crucial themes that will be discussed at the Property Guru Asia Real Estate Summit this December. I will kick off this podcast with a fact. According to the UN, nearly 70% of people will be living in cities by 2050. As the world's cities continue to grow exponentially, they become more at risk of overcrowding, resulting in cities with ever-expanding boundaries and greater damage to our environment. Today's guest is the Visionary of the Year awardee at last year's Property Guru Asia Real Estate Summit, none other than Colin Shi, founder of Never Too Small, a media company dedicated to small footprint design and living, with an incredibly popular YouTube channel, which currently boasts over 2.4 million subscribers. Hello, once again, Colin. Welcome and great seeing you. Before we start, please tell us a little something about yourself.
And hello again, Tina. It's been a while now since we last chat. Let me introduce myself. So my name is Colin Shi. I'm the creator and creative director for Never Too Small YouTube channel. We are a dynamic media company, and we started from YouTube, of course, and now we are an online media platform dedicated to showcasing and promoting small footprint living and innovative architectural and interior design projects. And we make videos, we make documentaries about small footprint living and sustainable design. And we also publish books and digital guides as well.
Thank you, Colin. Colin, for those who are unfamiliar with the concept, can you please explain what is meant by small footprint living and how it has grown in popularity as a lifestyle choice over the past decade?
Right. To sum it up, small footprint living is an environmentally conscious lifestyle and design approach as well that centers around minimizing one's ecological impact by choosing smaller, energy efficient homes, and also with sustainable building materials. And with conscious consumptions, ultimately reducing waste, reducing resources usage, and transform the way we live and interacting with our growing cities. Of course, that's also tackling urban overcrowding issues globally whilst improving the quality of life. And what was your second question again? Why has it become a popularity lifestyle choice?
Yes, if you can explain how it has grown in popularity as a lifestyle choice over the past decade.
I guess most importantly, this is driven by the economic considerations, the rising cost of living as well as the population growth and the shortage of housing, which led to an increasing property prices. And at the same time, the younger generations is more inclined towards quality of living rather than quantity, especially in terms of how much space we need to live happily. That makes small living successful. And to make small living successful, we also need to have the availability of the surrounding amenities and also good urban planning and good transportation infrastructures. Those also play a crucial part. And small living is typically more desirable in urban areas and cities that offer these convenience and amenities. And traditional belief of having a bigger house equals to better lifestyle has becoming somewhat outdated. And people these days more prioritize curated lifestyles, experiences, and owning the things they love rather than accumulating more possessions. And when we choose for higher quality items, that means we owning fewer things as well, which also contribute to better ecological outcomes in general. So at Never Too Small, we strongly believe that design plays a vital role in the success of small living. It involves It involves maximizing the use of space and using design to achieve a higher quality of life within limited space.
Now, Colin, it's a sobering fact that construction creates an estimated third of the world's overall waste and at least 40% of the world's carbon dioxide emissions. With more people seeking life in the city and the rate of construction accelerating, how do we accommodate that change while keeping our carbon footprint at an acceptable level?
Recently, in fact, a few weeks ago, I heard this presentation by a New Yorker architect. His name is Vishan Chakrabarty. And in his presentation, he said that by 2100, which is what, another 70 years or so, the world will have a population of just over 11 billion people. That's almost 3 more billion people will be living on this planet. And to house all these people, we need to build another 2.4 trillion square feet of new built spaces to house all these people. And to give you a sense of scales, that's equivalent to adding a New York City every month for the next 40 years in order to house all these growing populations. And that's quite shocking, to be honest, to think about it. And of course, we need to know that our resources on this planet Earth are limited. And traditionally, when we build new buildings, we often use new virgin materials, which require a lot of energy to produce and process. And that ended up, we release a lot of carbon CO2. During the excavation process, the processing of raw materials, and also the transportation. And also each year, we excavated around 1 billion tons of raw materials. That amount is also equivalent of the mass of Mount Everest, about 2/3 mass of the Mount Everest every 12 months. So it's quite shocking to know that as well. So we need to really look into these issues and what can we do to have a positive change. And luckily, architects and builders and designers, many of them are working to reduce their carbon footprint in several ways. So by choosing sustainable or eco-friendly materials or recycled materials or even local materials and even regenerative materials. And also designing buildings with, you know, energy efficient in mind, with better insulations, energy efficient heating cooling system, and using renewable energy, for example, solar panels. Yeah. And also, let me think, what else can I add? Oh, yes. And there are some innovative construction methods these days as well to create less waste and to have smaller environmental impact, such as modular constructions or design for deconstruction as well. D&D is called design for disassembly. So materials like wood or even metals, when we not glue them together, we can separate them and reuse them as many times as possible. And also the design with a circular in mind, which is eliminating waste during your design process. And also the other way is to do is to reduce the demolitions in the future. When we design new buildings, we're trying to think of dual functionalities. For example, if we design new office building or commercial buildings, can it be turned into residential buildings in the future when, you know, office space no longer required, rather than if we just design with the office space in mind, it might not work properly when we want to plan for residentials and stuff like that. And of course, we need to look into better urban planning and also encourage public transportation use to reduce the carbon emissions. Yeah.
Now, the Wonderful Ways Project tackles this pressing question of ways. Can you elaborate on some of the initiatives that you have seen in Asia Pacific that are addressing this problem in a unique and innovative way?
So it's funny, the word waste, it's such a dirty word, you know. It's actually one of the favorite words my mom likes to use. Waste of time, waste of money, waste of energy, right? The construction and demolitions process produce a lot of waste. And but then when we say waste, the materials is already deemed useless, has no value, and it no longer serves any purpose. But with waste and raw or raw materials, a lot of the time is only 1 degree of separations. We need to train ourselves to re-evaluate waste. And then with some processes and cleaning up, we can recreate them into raw material again. And with that way, it's usually more energy efficient, and then we don't release as much carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. So, and this is why this year we are producing a 6-episode documentary series called Wonderful Waste. We started release this series since last June, earlier this year. So each month we'll release one episode until December, which we will be releasing the last episode. And in this series, we are focusing on what role design can play in inherently wasteful and sustainable building of our homes and buildings and things that fuel them. So in this series, we feature 6 key designers and innovators who are finding the utility in our forgotten furnitures, plastics, construction waste, or even discarded digital appliances, and exploring the origin of their passion and sustainability. So Wonderful Waste followed them as they paved their way to a brighter future by turning waste into useful materials, building materials again, or to design the furnitures again. So yeah, so we have designers who are turning plastic waste into beautiful design panels that we can use for building interior cladding, furniture, or even shop display. But we also have designers who are using discarded concrete to make them into furniture. And we also have designers who are turning old tires from cars into green steel for our construction again. So our purpose is we want to inspire younger designers and architects to have a different perspective when it comes to choosing materials, and for them to choose more sustainable materials. Since, you know, almost 20% of our audience are young designers and architects, so this series we think is an important conversation startup for a lot of people.
Now, Colin, I read recently that the Asia Pacific region houses more pets, dogs and cats both, than any other. An estimated nearly 300 million pet dogs and cats live in Asia Pacific households. That's mind blowing. That's approximately 100 million more than in North America. Now, between 2016 and 2021, the pet population grew at a staggering 11.8% compound annual growth rate. Now, as a fur parent yourself, can you tell us how the real estate sector is meeting the needs of this growing community, and what does pet centric housing look like for you?
Oh, wow. Well, I live in a 40 square studio apartment and I have a dog. A lot of the time, I think outside from our living space, well, we'll just talk about the living space first. So if we are designing an apartment building, a lot of the time we try to create more public spaces or communal spaces for the residents to use. And in that way, sometimes we over-design them a little bit by putting a lot of planters and, you know, the amenities that people don't use as often, like barbecue or even, you know, furniture and things. But then it's always nice to have a little patch of greens, of grass for the residents who have pets to take their pets there, you know, to release or to let them off the leash and run around a bit. And in a way, I used to live in a smaller studio apartment in Melbourne City, and above our building apartment, there's quite an open area for the dogs to run around. That is where I met most of my neighbors and met their dogs. And then we create this little community, and we have WhatsApp group, and we can talk to each other. And then there was once one of the neighbors' dog ran away to the street. So we saw it on the WhatsApp group. So we all went and looked for the dogs together. Oh, and in terms of not just the building itself, but I think to a broader sense for the city planning, the council really need to create more spaces for pet owners to go with their pets. For example, like off-leash area in parks or gardens. And there's many ways to do it. I think dogs is definitely part of the community. We need spaces that for them to feel safe, for us pet owners to feel safe. And knowing that pets has a crucial part to play in our community in terms of how you know, is they are such a conversation starter, especially with strangers. They come and pet your dog and then you get to know them, and that's how relationship is formed. That's how we build community to start mm-hmm. with. Yeah.
I definitely agree.
Yeah, a lot of the time, like the other day when I walked my dog, right, these strangers, he wasn't looking at me, but he was looking at my dog, and he started smiling at my dog. And at the traffic light, we started to have a conversation. And then I found out that he's also watching Never Too Small. So things like that happens, yeah.
Now, do you see this trend further evolving in the future?
I don't see it as a trend. It's already part of the community.
That's true. That's true. Okay, so finally, how does small footprint design accommodate the huge pet population in APAC, particularly in overcrowded urban cities?
Not even in Australia. I don't think they have that in mind at all. But then for me, I'm starting to have this thought within myself about pet houses for small apartments. A lot of the time when we have a dog needs its private space. You know, they need to rest and they need to get away from human occasionally. It's part of the dog's nature. And we need to create a safe space for them to feel like it's their own, where they can hide their toys or their leftover snacks. And with that, I'm trying to create a space for my dog in my 40 square meter studio apartment. I find that difficult because if I am to buy a pet house from the market, it would take up a space, a valuable space within my small apartment. And then I often think, my dog is 8 years old. What happened if my dog passed away in 4 years or 6 years time? You know, who knows, right? Touch wood. And what happened to the furniture, the pet house? So I'm thinking next year for Melbourne Design Week, I want to curate designers from all over the world, not just Australia, for them to design multifunctional pet house. So with this, the process is either using CNC or a very easy way for DIY, for people from anywhere in the world can find discarded items or, you know, basic DIYs. Even with the most simple basic DIY skills, can make this multifunctional pet house. So the way is, I'm looking at it like a pet house can be also a storage space, or could be also an extra chair for the small spaces, or a coffee table. And then when the dog passes on, and this piece of furniture can live on in your house, it can convert into another piece of furniture. With that, we are reducing waste. We are keeping this pet house and turn it into a different form. And with, and then, you know, it's in a way, it can remind us of our loved pets. And at the same time, we still can have a piece of furniture for a long, long time.
That's the end goal, to be reminded.
Yeah.
I smell a competition brewing. Maybe you should throw a competition for that one.
Yeah. Who knows, right?
Right. Well, Colin, it's great seeing you, and I'll see you next month in Bangkok.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
And thanks for tuning in to this special series of the Property Report podcast by Property Guru. We hope to see you soon at the annual Property Guru Asia Real Estate Summit on December 8th in Bangkok, Thailand. Catch the Wonderful Waste exclusive screening with Colin Chee himself on December 9th. And don't forget to visit asiarealestatesummit.com for more info.